Welcome inside the Locked On NFL Draft Podcast. I'm John Ledyard from thedraftnetwork.com, along with Trevor Sikkema, also from thedraftnetwork.com. We are live on site in Indianapolis, and it feels really good because we are using our new recording equipment.
I know.
If you've noticed.
Can you guys tell? If you can tell.
If you can tell, our voices sound
twice.
More sexual than normal. Did you say it's a good way to describe it?
Yeah.
It's what's he say?
Only if I talk in this smooth jazz
Kingsbury
voice.
Style.
Yeah, Kingsbury's voice is.
Telling you, he's really not that good looking. We've concluded that.
But he sounds like he's good looking.
Yes, right.
He
exactly.
sounds like he's good
Just close your eyes. And,
yes, yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's
right,
how it goes.
Right. So we're recording on this new awesome equipment. We're in person. So this is actually, we are in the same room this time when we record the podcast. I know some of y'all think that we always are. We aren't. But today we are, and we will be for over the next several days with you guys.
Indeed.
Yes, in Indianapolis. So it will be good. We'll be talking combine. Pressers were yesterday, and there was a lot of observations and takeaways, Trevor.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of general managers spoke. Lots of head coaches spoke. We've got a couple more that are going to speak today. But I think it's a really good time because it's the intersection of kind of all things offseason, free agency, things that happened in this past season that people want to talk about. But I really like the ones that gear more toward the draft and some of the focus there because it seemed some of these ones, like I was in the Steelers one, all I wanted to talk about is Antonio Brown. And people in Pittsburgh media don't really know about the draft, and they don't really care about it because Pittsburgh's not been bad, really, for a while. So
sure.
It's not been a big deal.
They
just want to talk about Antonio Brown. But I kind of like going to these ones where, like, the Colts, like, they're talking about how to build and what do they value in edge rushers and, you know, how many running backs do you need and, all, you know, stuff like that. Like, those are the ones I really like being.
No, and it's almost like it's the part of the year where, like, this all starts to get real. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, free agency's about to hit in a week and a half, and there's, you know, it's no more like talking, oh, this or that, blah, blah, blah. You figure out at the combine, you figure out where teams are really looking to where they're going to improve their roster. Like, sometimes you could tell teams are like, yeah, we're probably going to be big players in free agency. And other times, these other teams, you can find out that they're all in on the draft, basically. Like, if they can't shut up about some draft prospects, what they're going to do and how they're going to move back and all this kinds of stuff, then they're probably all in on the draft. And there's a couple of you learn so much. It's almost like going to watch a guy live playing on the field. Like, some people go, tape's great. Obviously, you need the tape. Like, watch so much you can of a prospect. But go to, like for a lot of these guys that can, it's like, go to one game in person. You know, like, if this guy that you're thinking about taking with, like, a top 50 pick or something, like, go see him once in person or something. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people can find something different. And with these GMs and coaches, I kind of get the same way. It's kind of like, it's cool to once a year get to see them in person. And we see them on ESPN all the time. We read about what happens with them around the country. But we really actually get to see how they react to certain questions, what they're like with the media, which we'll get into with guys like Gettleman and whatever. But it's a good time. I love the combine.
It is. It's fun. It's like you said, it's one of those unique once-a-year experiences. And I think I'm kind of glad it's only once a year because I tend to just want to make judgments on who's a good GM based on their 15-minute presser, you know?
Of course.
Like, I'm fully convinced everything Thomas Dimitroff does is gold now. Just his hair, his glasses, like and it's just his way about him. He's like the most humble dude.
You like
dude.
The Six Flags haircut, huh?
Yeah, you know, he's got it going on. His hairstyle is not totally dissimilar from yours.
Yeah, but his is like
it's not cut on the side.
And it like, he can pop it up.
It's
like,
just
he's
got wild.
Like the,
yeah.
Right, that's what I'm saying. It looks like he just went to Six Flags.
Oh, yeah.
That's why I call it the Six
Flags
haircut.
Right.
I saw
your tweet, yeah. He's got kind of that mixture of bedhead but class. It's like
it's perfect, right?
Yeah, it really is. It's unique, and I think I love his perspective on team building.
You want to talk about him and
yeah,
Quinn?
Yeah.
Let's talk about the Falcons.
Yeah, because they're just the Falcons are different. They don't operate like other organizations
around
the NFL.
They
value certain things, but they have their own way, right? They have their own style of evaluating.
Mm-hmm.
They evaluate in their own way, and I know some people say, "Oh, he pulled some things from Seattle." That's true. Like they like competitive players, but it isn't like Seattle. Like they are very much, you know, in the people business, in terms of being able to meet with their guys and Dan Quinn talked at length about mental health amongst players and how that's a big priority for him and having his guys get professional help when they need it and things and having that available to them. And also building a culture. He said one of his biggest goals as a coach is building a culture that is basically a bond in the locker room, that teammates can be there for each other and coaches can be there for teammates. And he said in a lot of places, that's just like not even a second. Like they just expect that to happen like a family, you know, quote unquote.
Right.
That you hear coaches throw around that cliche, but it doesn't happen automatically.
No, it's not true. Right. For sure. Right. No, I mean, you could look around. And I caught the tail end of his presser, I think. And one of the examples that he was saying like was with, I think, Calvin Ridley. And he was talking about him being a little shy to go up to like Matt Ryan or Julio Jones when he was a rookie. And they have the kind of culture where, you know, Dan Quinn was able to say like, no, like go up and talk to him. Like they want you to talk to him and everything. And like those guys, like the top guys on the team are the ones that also mentor everybody else because they know that they're only good as their weakest link, right? It's a very famous phrase, but yeah. I mean, a lot of football teams and philosophies kind of take that to heart. And I think the Falcons are certainly one of them. And their whole, the Falcons, I think, do a really, really good job of blending their PR and, you know, what they want their fans to be based around and also like the team philosophy have. And they have that whole like in brotherhood thing. That's what they pump out. Yeah, and right. It's true, like from the team all the way to the fans. And I think that when it goes top to bottom throughout an entire roster, you see, guys, it's easier for dudes to get bought in. It's easier for younger players to feel comfortable and be stars right away. I mean, like Deion Jones, it's a good example, I think. Even like Brian Poole, I think, was a great example for them too. So these are guys who like performed really well right away, kind of right off the out of the gate. And I think that that's even part of a draft philosophy, right. You know?
And Dimitroff comes off as kind of a book nerd type of guy. Is really big in analytics, and that's been a big part of what they do. Obviously, he's been really successful.
So they don't run on 2nd and 10.
I would assume. Yes, I hope so. I don't think they do. But no, I think that he, just the way that he is not like a tip. Like, compare Gettleman to Dimitroff, right? Like,
I can't.
Complete football guy, like, who just like, my way, like, we do things the same way, line up in the trenches, you
they
know?
They are who they are. Yeah,
and like, Dimitroff's like, if you came up to him right now, you just Trevor Sekema, and you said to him, I have a really good theory for successful strategies on 3rd and 4, he would want to hear what you had to say. Like, he would genuinely listen and ask you questions.
Yeah.
Gettleman would be like, what's that piece of paper, you nerd, you know, kind of, you know, and Gettleman's great. Like, we'll talk about him in a second. Like, there are some funny things about Gettleman too, and there are probably some good things about the way that he evaluates. I just find somebody like Thomas Dimitroff so engaging to be around because you can tell, and he talks openly about how much he appreciates the dialogue with his colleagues and with people in the analytics field and in all walks of life that enhance his knowledge and his education and allows him to bring that to his job and how he does it. So I find him to be a very fascinating person and somebody who does his job really
Before
well.
We get to Gettleman, I wanted to, because this is a kind of a good transition, but it's almost similarities here, because there was such an emphasis on character with the Atlanta Falcons, whether it was Dimitroff who was talking or Dan Quinn. And that was very much the same thing for the Tennessee Titans. John Robinson and Mike Vrabel, both of them, like, character was number one. Somebody asked him, and I think they were going around to a bunch of buddies, and he's like, hey, what do you look for? Like, what's three characteristics you really look for in a draft prospect? Because, you know, they're at the combine, they're looking to evaluate guys. And it wasn't like, It wasn't a certain athletic ability or a threshold or even like football IQ. What he said was the three things that they said, and I think John Robinson said this, and then Mike Vrabel really kind of echoed it in different words afterwards. It was, the first thing was toughness, dependability, and team first. Like, all three things, like extremely high character things. And Mike Vrabel was basically, he also had a quote, and he said, we will treat you the way you treat the team. Like, if you give your all for your team, we will give our all for you. We will put you in the best situation. We will stay after, you know, after practice and work with you. We will do anything, but like, you will get what you put in. Whatever you think of this team is how far you take it. And I just, those were the two that really stood out to me of these philosophies. And, you know, we're talking about, and it's cool, I think, on these days, figuring out the different philosophies for different franchises. Those two are so very character matters. Those are teams that, like, okay, I'm thinking it's less likely they're going to take on risks on certain players that are like diva players or anything like that. These don't fit there. And that 100% goes into draft strategy. So, you know, like, we might see, you know, like, let's just say, like, Ja'Kai Polite. Like, there have been some rumors about Ja'Kai Polite, I don't know, not being the best teammate. Like, I've heard those before. I don't know how true they are or whatever, but, like, let's just say that they are kind of true. Let's say Ja'Kai Polite was on the board at 19 and the Titans don't pass, or the Titans won't pick him.
Yeah.
And their fans are like, what are you doing? Right. How could you do this?
That's
like,
why.
This is unbelievable. This is why.
Right.
This is why. And this is the stuff you only learn at the combine.
Right.
When you get to hear this stuff.
Because it's the one time they really have to, you know, from different angles too, I think. They get asked a lot of different questions from different angles. And it's funny because you mentioned John Robinson and Mike Vrabel being on the same page. But I think it goes even beyond that. Like, I was so curious to see the GMs and head coaches, especially as a lot of them speak back to back, how on the same page they were. And, like, man, you can just tell, like, some places like Arizona, like, it just, I don't know, man. You just, like, Kime was just saying different things.
I don't believe in Cliff Kingsbury.
Like,
I think I told you this immediately after his press conference. I sat there and I listened to Cliff Kingsbury's entire press conference, and I don't think it was you. I went up to Kyle and Joe because they were I just walked up and that dude ain't it. Nope.
You just felt that.
Oh my goodness! It just, like, the answers he had. Because here's the thing.
He's very soft spoken.
I'm reading about McVay right now, and I'm reading about what made McVay successful. And it's not just X's and O's, because there are plenty of guys that know X's and O's.
Mm-hmm.
And what made McVay so successful as a young coach with not a ton of experience, you know, being a head coach, first time head coach, everything, is the way that he went about being a leader and being a sponge, and how he elevated other people and how he surrounded himself with the smartest people in the room, and how all this kind of open dialogue everywhere about what he knew, what he didn't knew, all this kind of stuff. That just, none of those elements existed with Cliff Kingsbury.
Yeah.
None of them.
Yeah, I'm in some ways, I'm excited about Kingsbury in the NFL because of the potential it can mean for the game, because it will be fun and exciting and new and different.
All I'll say is that if he succeeds, I will be shocked. It will be against my better judgment.
Yeah.
It really will.
But I agree with you that I'll be interested to see. You know, we see a snippet, obviously, players see something else, but I'll be very curious to see how he conducts himself as a leader of an organization, because he is soft-spoken, laid-back type of personality, which can work for sure. In a young guy, we talk about energy like a lot more with those type of players, or those type of coaches that have really been successful with that. And he does not strike me as a highly energetic, take-charge type of personality. And obviously, we're openly admitting, we're observing a snippet.
Yeah,
that's it.
We're watching a guy for 15 minutes.
But this is part of our job. We draw conclusions based on the little bits that we see. We leave room for the fact that we could be wrong, but we've got to take stances and we have to take positions. And I agree with you, especially because the Cardinals are already a dumpster fire. And we'll talk more at length about this too. The Cardinals are already a dumpster fire. And we said this when Josh Rosen was drafted. We went on this podcast after that first round and we said, I'm glad Josh Rosen ended up on a team and didn't fall very far in the draft because he didn't deserve to. I honestly think it's going to be very hard for him to be successful in Arizona. And I said this as my QB, as he was my QB1.
Sure. Fit matters, maybe.
Right. Like, I just, and I know, I fully believe that this Kyler Murray stuff is smokescreen for the Cardinals, but in my heart, I hope it's true, because even though it would be,
it would get incredibly dumb. It would go Rosen out of
Arizona. It would get him out of Arizona to somewhere. Can't, like, Steve Keim can't evaluate offensive line. We've seen it for years and years and years. Man. He has. He should have been fired.
That's a crappy thing about Kyler Murray too. Is like, I'm probably higher on Kyler Murray than you are, even though he might end up being your QB1.
He is.
And I mean, like, I think Kyler could actually be really good in the NFL. It won't be in Arizona. No.
Who will be good in Arizona?
Right, nobody.
Like, I just have to, like, and I hate to go out and sign a bunch of cast-offs or Robert Alford. Like, okay, maybe Alford helps your team. Charles Clay, like, I just, this is their moves, and they've kind of, like, both, Kingsbury said, like, we're going to be, or one of them was saying, I forget who said, like, we're going to be really active and free. Like, no, you guys got to draft me. Look at the way Chris Ballard did it. I know I kind of got on Ballard for not doing enough in free agency a year ago, and I think he still could have done a couple things here and there that made sense, but now looking at his strategy, I can realize
he trusted your process and made the playoffs.
He trusted mine.
Well, I'm saying the draft thing. No,
oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because you were like, all right, you've had some good drafts. Now, like, go sign a free agent or something. And he was just like,
well, you
know,
I had one at that point, but I was like, you have holes all over your team. Like, go get some guys on your team that can help. And I think, had he done that, maybe in one or two key spots, they could have been better. But also, it is a risky way to build your team. And I think he's right that, like, by leaving that space open, when your guys that you draft that are going to be good, are ready to be really good, like, that you can sign them long term because you have that space because you didn't spend it on making dumb moves. Just feels like the Cardinals don't get it. Like,
nope,
you're rebuilding. Like,
nope,
you're rebuilding, guys. Like, the last thing you should be doing is thinking about a quarterback. Now, I granted, I don't think they are thinking about a quarterback, but like, if you're an organization like in their position, like, how do you build around the guy you just traded away assets for to go get to be your franchise quarterback? How do you do that? So, to me, that's a big part of the conversation in Arizona that needs to be considered, because yeah, I definitely I don't think that there is a lot of stability there in that organization, and so I think that yeah, there are some concerns there for sure. But I think that more than anything, it reinforced to me Kingsbury, Keim didn't seem like they were on the same page, even with their comments about the quarterback position and some of that stuff. Like, didn't seem like
even they were on the same page. I don't even like the page.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, for sure. And I appreciated so much the other examples, like Ballard and Reich, same page, like lockstep in the relationship they have, and them talking about it. Peterson and Howie Roseman.
We've talked same about, thing. We've talked about this before, and like I brought this up, Lynch. Like top down. Yeah, like organizations start top down.
Yep.
And the farther you get away from the top of the pyramid, obviously it gets harder to, keep the message going across all facets, right? Because, you know, they're the owner. There's yeah. normally like one. There's one owner, and then like the GM. There's one GM, but then there's a staff of coaches, and then there's 53 players, and there's practice squad guys, and there's like a whole scouting staff, and all this. So the farther you get down the pyramid, the more difficult it becomes to convey that message. So if you don't have it just locked in at the top, your head coach and your GM, you are already so far behind the eight ball.
Right.
So now I'm continuity is so important, I think, with the message with at yeah. the top there.
And a couple of them even talked about, I forget who it was, that said like the importance of a front office and a head coaching staff to be on the same page. Like they, somebody said, who was it? They said they've been some places where the scouting staff and the coaching staff weren't on the same page like ever. They just didn't care. Oh, it might have been Mayock.
Oh, you mean Tampa Bay?
Maybe
you mean Tampa Bay last year?
Right. Maybe. I mean, sure, that was the issue with Tampa
last 2 years.
Yeah, with Light drafting players. And then
yeah, I mean, Light wanted to. Right.
And so hopefully that changes there. But, I mean, I think even as you look at the NFL today, like we named the Colts, we named the Eagles, we named the Rams, like obvious with Snead and McVay, like lockstep. The 49ers, when they get healthy, they're going to be another team that's on the rise. The Chicago with Nagy and Ryan Pace being on the same page. So far, so good anyway, only 1 year in. But I think that is the deciding. That's a big difference right now between a lot of those different situations is that that coach and that GM, they need to be on the same page consistently. And right now, that's not something that's taking place in a lot of places around the league. And because of that, draft strategies are failing and players are going to waste and bad situations basically are coming out of a lot of different drafts in the NFL.
Yep.
And so that was an impressive, that was a part of the takeaways, I think, from the pressers that made some sense to me that really hit home with me. But there were little things that were said too. I mean, we talked about the Arizona situation a little bit and kind of our thoughts
Dave
there.
Dave Gettleman's absolutely wild.
Dave Gettleman is wild.
Dude is wild.
But you like him.
Dude was like looking to fight with the media the second he stepped on the stage. I mean, like, his opening monologue was the longest I've ever heard. And it was kind of about, like, Eli and everything, and he kind of went all over. It was funny because he does that thing where, you know, like, you're talking to somebody, and you're waiting for a rebuttal, but you almost, like, rebuttal for them just so you can continue talking and then, like, rebuttal their rebuttal. Yeah. That was Dave Gettleman, like, three times in his opening monologue, which is hilarious. And then, obviously, you have the thick Boston accent, so, like, whenever he's getting riled up and he's using his hands when he talks, the Boston accent comes out, and people were asking him about Eli, and he, like, snapped about Eli. Because at the end of the year, and this has major draft implications, man. Mm. What they think of Eli Manning has major draft implications.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the year, they weren't too, like, overly, hey, Eli's our guy. Like, they weren't parading that around. It's not like they were saying, yeah, he's a bum, we're getting rid of him. But I think they had multiple chances to be like, is Eli the guy? And they didn't necessarily put their foot down and say, yes, of course he is. And then at the podium today, him and head coach Pat Shurmur were kind of like, yeah, Eli's the guy. Like, we can win games with Eli. And Gettleman went off this, like, tangent, and he's like, you know, he said this phrase, he's like, if you tell yourself a lie long enough, you believe it.
Yeah.
And he's like, and there's this negative there's this negative narrative around Eli that blah, blah, blah. He's like, just because he's not the exact same guy he was in his late 20s, early 30s, doesn't mean he can't win you football games. And like, I get it, but it was just kind of like, also, it's like, hey, dude, you didn't take a quarterback in a quarterback stacked draft last year. And are you really about to not take one again this year just to spite people? Because that's what it almost sounded like. He was almost like, yeah, screw you guys. We're going to keep Eli. Yeah,
that's what it seemed
like. I'm going to keep him to spite you people.
That man is stubborn. Like, he would.
Now, he's smart and he's been around a long time. I get it. He's had success. But stubborn is also a word I feel like I would use to describe Dave Gettleman.
Yeah, and he is old school. There's no doubt.
Extremely old school.
He makes fun of the newer way of thinking and doing things. So he believes they can win on running the football, I think, and we'll see if he likes a quarterback bad enough. I would say I feel pretty confident the Giants won't take a quarterback. We'll see how that changes, if that changes as we move forward. I feel like certain Oakland's not going to take quarterback, right? Like after Mayock's comments today. Yeah, we'll see what Gruden says
now,
tomorrow.
Everybody, Gruden will be fun.
Because Gruden's a decision maker.
So, you know, somebody asked him about taking a quarterback and everything, and Mayock, you know, the first thing he said is like, you know, we got Derek Carr. We believe that Derek Carr is a franchise quarterback. And I tweeted that out. Like, the quote, and he said, we believe that Derek Carr is a franchise quarterback, end quote. And people were like, we didn't say our franchise quarterback. And I was like, look, I'm all for reading into certain words.
And he literally said later in the press conference, the last question I think he got asked, he said straight up, he's like, I think we're going to have a real difficult time finding a better quarterback option than the one we have in our
building. So I think I'm with you. I think we're not looking at a quarterback for Oakland.
Right.
And honestly, that's smart, right? I mean, because
you can
look at Derek Carr and you can go, okay, you know, what it was in the situation that Gruden had coming in the first year, it wasn't great, but Derek Carr's had those back injuries, and it's always tough for a quarterback. You know, he's kind of coming off those, and he's a tough dude, so you don't even know how hurt he is. But here's the thing. You've got three first-round picks, right? You are better off using them elsewhere.
And two for next year.
Knowing that you have a quarterback who it could work with. We've seen Derek Carr be good.
Yeah, so you could at least be competitive.
Right, so what, he's had like a down streak. Yeah, he hasn't been great lately.
Neither has the team.
But Derek Carr has been good. So you are better served using those three picks, I think, on other positions, and then kind of betting like, hey, maybe this works out with Carr. Because there is a legitimate chance that it does work out with Derek Carr. So that's what I think.
I don't think there's much of a chance that Carr becomes the guy. But I think you can be somewhat competitive with him next year, and then you evaluate the position and you decide, you know, they paid him a lot of money too, so it's going to be hard to move him and get what he's worth. So maybe he plays great and, you know, you feel like he's your guy moving forward, and you go with him for another year and maybe you draft somebody then at that point. So, but I don't think this is the year basically to make that move if you're Oakland. There's no reason. There's no rush. It's not a good quarterback class. I don't think John Gruden would know what to do with Kyler Murray, quite frankly. I can't see him making Kyler Murray the best that Kyler Murray could be. And I don't know that the ceiling is high enough with the other guys, to take a swing on him that early in the draft. So I'm with you. Build up the rest of the roster and go from there, I think. I mean, there were a lot of fun observations, like, from the day. I felt like we kind of got, a good feel for teams that wouldn't go for quarterbacks. And then Jacksonville, Miami, it's kind of obvious that they will. Mm-hmm. But you're not going to get those guys to say a lot about the position. But I did think it was interesting. Doug Marrone talked about the importance of quarterback being able to buy an extra second in the pocket and how much he values that and being able to create outside of structure a little bit and get away when things go wrong. And that made me think about Kyler Murray as Jacksonville. And it made me wonder if maybe Arizona.
I think there's a legitimate chance that Kyler Murray ends up in Jacksonville.
Maybe Arizona feels like there's a little bit of interest there for Jacksonville, and they feel like they know that, and they feel like
spots, a lot of spots.
It's a lot of spots.
That's
but
a lot.
If you're Arizona,
up.
You shoot your shot. You make them think that's where they got to get.
Are you giving
to.
Up 3 ones?
I don't think you're giving up three, but you're probably giving up next year. You're not giving up next year's one for sure, and probably another decent pick. You know, so
for sure, yeah.
I mean, you're probably giving up a good bit to get up to that spot.
Man.
But it's going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting to see if Arizona, you know, what they decide to do, really. I mean, they're the talk of the draft right now, but I think, you know, you and I have been on the same page. We do think it's going to be one of those situations where the smoke screen could be there to see what they could get for that, and I don't blame them for that, because Arizona, they got a lot of needs, and if you have the opportunity to come away with the King's ransom, I think you got to take it, because it's not just one player. You know, Nick Bosa is not just going to save that franchise. They got a lot of needs. And if you can't fill those needs around a quarterback, I really think that they're going to continue to struggle and struggle.
They make a trade. I can't wait for the headlines to just read Kingsbury's ransom.
Yeah. Oh, wow. You should be in the journalism business.
No.
You wouldn't be bad at it.
No. With those nerds, I couldn't.
You should try it.
No way.
I'm telling you. You got some untapped potential. But there's some
of
our observations.
My two index fingers. That's how I type journalism.
Anybody who's seen that video on Twitter.
I only type with two fingers.
He's truly a hunting peck.
Oh, yeah. No question.
It's incredible to watch. I mean, I'm not even like a true Homer O'Keefe guy, but the way you do it is truly an art.
It's unique. Yeah. Whose throwing motion is absolutely terrible, but it works?
Philip Rivers.
Yeah. No, I'm the Philip Rivers of typing.
I think somebody said that, actually.
Oh,
I think
okay.
They commented on
nice.
It. Called you the Philip Rivers.
No, perfect.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, we call this the Philip Rivers, I think.
Better using contraception, but you know.
Wow. Wow.
Sorry.
Wow.
Sorry.
Low bar, I mean. Oh, boy. All right. There's our observations from the Wednesday pressers at the Scouting Combine. We got some more pressers today that we're going to be going to and tweeting out and writing about on thedraftnetwork.com. Also, comp picks are in for the mock draft simulator. If you haven't seen it yet, comp picks are in, so you guys can draft now 254 picks, because technically two of them got forfeited because of the supplemental draft last year. So 254 picks, they're all in there in the correct order. You guys can do your full, complete team mock drafts now over at thedraftnetwork.com. Also, the Build Your Own Big Board feature is running beautifully as well. So make your board, save them on the site, make your drafts, save them on the site, read our content. We got recaps of every team's pressers, and not just recaps, but also assessments and analysis. We got all kinds of cool stuff in there, like the direction we feel like the Broncos might go, corner, mid-round DBs that the Falcons might be looking for based on some of the things said in the presser. The Colts, you know, what they're valuing in edge rushers and what that could mean in terms of the types of players they are and they aren't looking at the position. So there's just a lot of cool stuff going on at thedraftnetwork.com, a lot of cool analysis. So make sure you check that out when you get a chance. And as always, thank you guys so much for listening. Keep it locked right here on Locked On NFL Draft.